This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The latest report in December stated that Rwanda had 3,000 to 4,000 of its own troops in the DRC.
That was Sasha Lenev, a senior policy advisor at the Sentry, a Washington research and policy organization focused on U.S.-Africa, discussing reports that Rwanda is backing the M23 rebels in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Details coming up. Also, Sudan's rapid support forces and allies have signed a charter paving the way for a parallel government. And food insecurity in Somalia is projected to deepen between April and June. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. A Rwandan government minister and the spokesperson of the M23 rebel group were sanctioned Thursday by the United States for alleged involvement in the recent conflict in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. This comes after M23 fighters on February 16th marched unopposed through Bukavu 3 weeks after taking over Goma, Eastern Congo's biggest city. VOA's Mariama Diallo looks into the group's motivations and what's next for this rebel movement that the DRC, United Nations, and many foreign governments say is backed by Rwanda.
The recent advances made by the M23 rebel military group in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo were not surprising because they are heavily armed and supported by Rwanda, a country with a strong military force, analysts tell VOA.
There's been a series of United Nations investigative reports over the last 3 years. They've said report after report that Rwanda is arming and supporting the M23 and, in fact, escalating that support. The latest report in December stated that Rwanda had 3,000 to 4,000 of its own troops in the DRC.
Sasha Lesnev is a senior policy advisor at the Sentry, a Washington NGO, on U.S.-Africa policy on human rights and conflict, and has testified before the U.S. Congress and the U.N. Security Council. While Rwanda denies the allegations, Lesnev says this crisis would have been preventable if the outside world had not taken its eyes off the situation recently.
They started rearming and reorganizing the M23 about 4 years ago. Then back in 2023, the United States brokered an intelligence sharing agreement and even sanctioned a Rwandan general for supporting the M23. Then Rwanda basically responded, promoting the general and continuing to escalate the situation, as well as the DRC reneging on its promise to stop arming and supporting the FDLR.
Rwanda's president, Paul Kagame, accuses the DRC of backing FDLR, the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, a Congo-based mainly Hutu rebel group that includes some fighters who were involved in the nation's 1994 genocide. The Tutsi-led M23, short for the March 23 movement, first seized control of Goma in 2012. The group was pushed back the next year by the Congolese army, some of its regional allies, and special operations forces of the UN Stabilization Mission in the DRC. The group has been among more than 130 armed groups operating in the eastern DRC, vying for control of valuable and abundant mineral wealth, including gold, diamonds, uranium, copper, also coltan and cobalt, major components in batteries used in electric cars, cell phones, and other electronics. Claude Gatebuke, a Rwandan genocide survivor, co-author of the book Survivors Uncensored, and co-founder of the Africa Great Lakes Action Network, says Rwanda is not the only backer of the M23.
It's Rwanda and Uganda, under the leadership of Paul Kagame and Yoweri Museveni, who are invading Congo to provide access to Congo's resources to the mostly Western multinationals. Again, this is all very well documented.
Vemba Fezu Dizolele is the director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies based in Washington.
Uganda has troops in DRC that are fighting conjointly with the Congolese against the ADF, which is the Allied Democratic Forces, an Islamist group that's based in that part of the country. So it's confusing in the sense that on one level, Ugandans are collaborating with the government of DRC. On the other hand, they've been reported to be engaged in this destabilization as well.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni, for the record, recently said he's ready to assist with peace initiatives in the DRC. Next on the agenda, M23 leaders have said they plan to go all the way to Kinshasa. To what end? We ask our analyst Dizolele and Gatebuke.
We do not know fully what they want. So it's gone anywhere from, are they trying just to hold part of the Kivus and surrounding area and set some kind of domination there? Or are they willing to go to Kinshasa?
For sure, they are trying to carve off the Kivu. The problem that they have, they would have been able to do this a long time ago had it not been for the Congolese not wanting to be in separate countries. And so they're going to try to keep that area by force for as long as they can, set up their own government, and pretty much try to run a parallel country inside of the Congo.
A statement posted on X by the M23 on February 17th reiterated the group's call for a direct and sincere dialogue with the DRC government. Speaking at the Munich Security Conference last week, DRC's President Felix Tshisekedi criticized the outside world for not taking action against Rwanda in light of the escalating violence in his country. On Thursday, a Rwandan government minister and a spokesperson of the M23 rebel group were sanctioned by the United States for their alleged involvement in the recent escalation. In response, Rwandan Foreign Minister Olivier Nduhungirehe tells VOA the recent sanctions are unjustified.
These kind of punitive measures cannot contribute toward peace and stability in our region.
The government also says the country's only aim is a secure border and that for the last 3 years, the conflict has involved hostile forces, including Congolese armed forces and FDLR, among others, that have not been sanctioned. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Sudan's paramilitary, rapid support forces and allies have signed a charter paving the way for establishing a parallel government. This as Sudan's army made advances recently against the rival groups. The Associated Press says the signing ceremony was held behind closed doors in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, on Sunday. Sudan's military has gained the upper hand in the conflict as the RSF suffered multiple blows. Sudan's military on Sunday broke a more than a year-long siege on the crucial city of Obeid. The victory restored access to a strategic area and strengthened supply routes. The military also says it kicked out the rapid support forces from its last stronghold in the White Nile province. Meanwhile, Doctors Without Borders says escalating attacks and fighting in and around the Zamzam displacement camp in Sudan's North Darfur have forced it to suspend activities there despite widespread starvation and immense humanitarian needs. Earlier this month, President Donald Trump signed an executive order directing the Justice Department to pause prosecutions of Americans accused of bribing foreign officials to enhance economic competitiveness. The order calls for a revised enforcement guidelines for the Foreign Corrupt Practice Act and instructs Attorney General Pam Bondi to halt enforcement until new guideline is issued. This move has raised concerns about the potential encouragement of global corruption. VOA's Paul Indio spoke with Chinua Ismai, President and CEO of Scepter 3 Global Advisors, to learn more about executive orders and the FCPA's enforcement pause.
Executive orders are a very powerful tool in presidential authority. And so it is, as we think about the three different branches of government, the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary, for the executive branch, executive orders are very important because it enables the president to carry out key aspects of running the federal government. A lot of times, without the delay of congressional passing of laws or the negotiations that typically go into that. So it allows the president to carry out policy actions. Historically, it's been used by every single president, especially in the modern era. It's been quite common. One can understand a criticism where folks may be concerned that it expands presidential authority, but there's no question that it is a critical tool for the president.
Legally, he's allowed to do that. There's no question about that.
Absolutely,
it's within his authority to do that.
Absolutely, there's no question. And I would also say people are within their authority to criticize, but that's part of what makes the democratic system work efficiently, is having all of that. But there's no question that the president does have authority to do what he's doing.
Executive orders that he has signed this far, it's called the U.S. Foreign Corruption Practices Act. What are your thoughts about that?
So the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, also known as the FCPA, which was, it's been enforced since 1977, is essentially an anti-bribery statute. And it has two key provisions. The first one is the anti-bribery provision. And then the second set of provisions are the accounting provisions. So the anti-bribery piece prohibits the corrupt payment, offer or payment of anything of value in exchange for business. And that piece actually impacts not just U.S. companies and persons, but also companies listed on the U.S. stock exchange and also companies that may be doing business in the U.S. So it has broad extraterritorial reach as well. The second side of it is the accounting provisions, which require companies to make and maintain accurate books and records. So it's the accounting provisions and the anti-bribery provisions.
Well, I've talked to people who work in anti-corruption offices. These agencies that have been set up by most African countries, they argue that if this was to stop, it's going to encourage a lot of people in some of these government offices to engage in corrupt practices. This has been one of the guardrails stopping mm-hmm. people from, getting all sorts of benefits using their offices.
I think that's a really fair point. There have been some concerns around moral hazard, but I do think that for businesses, you again don't want to find yourself on the wrong side of the law. I think there will be some who will engage in improper practices, but the president noted was his concerns around potential lack of competitiveness for American companies. So the fact that American companies may not be able to compete at an equal footing. That said, he did not reach a conclusion and say the statute should be repealed. He advised the Attorney General to issue guidance. So my biggest recommendation has been wait and see. Wait and see what guidance the Attorney General comes out with. Don't go through a massive reversal of policies or practices for 180 days. And then 180 days later, you're in a position where you have to now resurrect those policies and practices. And so I do think it's a time of wait and see.
That was Chinwe Ismay, President and CEO of Scepter 3 Global Advisors. She spoke to VOA's Paul Indiho. Food insecurity in Somalia is projected to deepen between April and June, with 4.4 million people, or 23% of the population, expected to be in a crisis level of food shortages. The latest Integrated Food Security Phase Condition, or IPC report, says that there is an increase of 1 million compared with the current period, January to March. An estimated 1.7 million children aged under the age of 5 are suffering acute malnutrition and require urgent treatment between January and December 2025. This includes approximately 466,000 cases of severe acute malnutrition and 1.2 million cases of moderate acute malnutrition. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. We'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. Kenyan authorities say one of the police officers it sent to Haiti to help rein in violent gangs was killed in an operation in the western Arbonite region. The commander of the Kenyan forces in Haiti says the police officer was airlifted out of the area and died from his injuries. Few details were provided by the Grand Grift gang controls the region. The death was a blow to efforts to rein in Haiti's gangs, which have rampaged through the country since the 2021 assassination of President Jovin Moisi. Kenya has sent hundreds of officers in the multinational force to help weak Haitian law enforcement. February is Black History Month in the United States. Among the nationwide celebrations were a white reception with President Donald Trump and a parade in Los Angeles. Genia Dulot has our story.
In Los Angeles, California, Brent Burton marches in the annual Kingdom Day Parade, a Black History Month event celebrating civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. Burton was a Los Angeles County firefighter for 37 years and is a historian of Black firefighting.
From the days of Sam Haskins in 1892 being the first, to the days of George Bright in 1902 when segregation started, to a segregated fire department where blacks only work at two fire stations, to now having seen four black fire chiefs in LA City Fire, one black fire chief in LA County Fire as the head of the department, there's been significant progress made, and we want to make sure those doors stay open.
Keisha Garcia came to the parade with her family. She says she's encouraged by black culture playing a more visible role in broader U.S. culture.
I didn't see that growing up. So, being young, I didn't know that we could be anything we wanted to be. But now that our children can see equality and inclusion, then they can understand that they could be anything that they want to be too.
This year's Black History Month follows an executive order from U.S. President Donald Trump, ending federal diversity, equity, and inclusion programs intended to offset workplace discrimination based on race, gender, and sexual orientation. The Trump administration says that those programs were discriminatory and deeply demeaning. Other critics of DEI say that everyone should be given the same opportunities. At the White House reception for Black History Month, Trump said support from black voters is one of the big reasons he was re-elected last year.
Today we pay tribute to the generations of black legends, champions, warriors, and patriots who helped drive our country forward to greatness.
Trump said Black History Month is a special time.
We love you all. We're going to work with you. We're going to make America greater than ever before. We're going to do it together.
In Los Angeles, parade marcher Anita Biggs said Black History Month is larger than politics.
We're not accepting anyone else's opinion of us. We know who we are. We know our history is deep. We know we can celebrate it all year if we want to. And we are happy to have the month of February where we do highlight our history.
Black History Month has been celebrated by every U.S. president since 1976. Jenya Dulo, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Secretary General Antonio Guterres said today that countries must work to end the Russia-Ukraine war, calling for a just and lasting peace on the third anniversary of Russia's invasion. Reuters reports he told a high-level meeting of the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva that Russia's actions in February 2022 violated the global body's founding principles. His remarks come ahead of a UN showdown on Ukraine later today in New York. The United States is urging members to back its resolution, which it says is focused on ending the war and pits it against a rival text by Ukraine and European allies. Guterres also condemned the death and destruction in Gaza, as well as human rights abuses in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
And time now for our sports roundup. I have our VOA sports analyst, Mokbil Yabaro, in studio. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehei.
So in NBA news, Victor Wembanyama of the San Antonio Spurs has a season-ending injury. What does that mean for the rising superstar?
That definitely means, you know, when you're 7'4" or 7'5", and you have a wingspan of close to 8 feet, it's very difficult for you to be able to be as mobile and just have the fluidity that this young man has. We see him sometimes stretching and doing yoga, so he's very limber. But unfortunately for him, he's been sidelined with a deep vein thrombosis in his right shoulder. Now, there are some folks that are speculating that due to this, them being precautionary, there's two sides to this, right? Making sure that, you know, this number one pick from just last year does not is not forced to come back in unnecessarily. And there's also a thing where teams in the past have been known or been seen to tank. So tanking means, you know, for whatever reason, some of your players may go down due to injury, and then you have the best possible chance of getting the number one or number two picks in the coming draft. Now, in this upcoming draft, you have this kid by the name of Cooper Flagg, who currently plays for Duke. He is a phenomenal player. He even actually worked out and played with the Team USA over the summer and was seen really taking on some of these premier players in the NBA. So folks know that he has the size and the ability to get the job done already from day one. So it would not be the worst thing possible for Victor Wembanyama to be teamed up with Cooper Flagg. So we'll keep an eye on that for sure.
And Mokbil, let's shift over to football and the Premier League. Had some big matches this weekend. Talk to us about some of them.
Yes, so you can't talk about any games without having to go number one with the Liverpool versus Manchester City game. Liverpool really asserting dominance on a Manchester City team that has been dominating the Premier League for years now. Outside of the 2020 COVID Premier League title that Liverpool won, this has been all Manchester City for the last X amount of years that we can think about, but you have really seen the decline in the team due to aging, injuries, lack of new tactics, and folks really understanding how to play against Manchester City. But kudos to Liverpool, who are really clicking on all cylinders and are currently atop the Premier League by 11 points, with Arsenal having to play one game, but currently it is 11 points from the second place team, Arsenal. Arsenal also was unable to make up that gap differential by losing to West Ham 1-0. So the Premier League is looking like it is going to go to Liverpool if all things stay as is.
And lastly, tennis. The world number one in men's tennis, Jannik Sinner, has been banned for doping. What does this mean for him?
This kind of really casts this negative light on the star, right? When you're the world number one, having any of these, not even necessarily, even just the pure allegation of a doping potential really adds a negative light onto all of the wins. He just won back-to-back Grand Slams. And unfortunately for him, he won't be able to compete again until the next 3 months. But we'll see how it goes. He says that he was not aware of it and it happened, you know, unintentionally. Wishing him all the best.
VOA analyst Mokbil Yabaro, thank you for your input. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Douglas Mpuga, and our engineer, Bill Androdi, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.